From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Are alien abductions based on neurological weapons? Next hour, special guest Robert Duncan with a number of other issues. Here's some of the news of the day. A study from Denmark offers the latest reassurance that cell phones don't trigger cancer. Now, you believe the study if you want. Scientists tracked 420,000 Danish cell phone users, including 52,000 who had grabbed onto the gadgets for 10 or more years, and some who started using them some 21 years ago. They matched phone records to the famed Danish Cancer Registry that records every citizen who gets that disease, and reported Tuesday that cell phone callers are no more likely than anyone else to suffer a range of cancer types. The study, published in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute, is the largest yet to find no bad news about the safety of cell phones and the radio frequency energy that they emit. But even the lead researcher doubts that it will end the debate. The weather forecast so far for the planned liftoff of Discovery was downgraded slightly, but still remained favorable for the first night space shuttle launch in more than 4 years. Concerns about clouds over the Kennedy Space Center at the launch of 9:35 p.m. Eastern Time Thursday caused forecasters to reduce the chances of favorable weather to 70% from 80%, but there are two technical issues that they're watching at this moment. Major news tomorrow. NASA will host a news briefing at 1 o'clock Eastern Time to present what they say new science results from the Mars Global Surveyor. And all these scientists all around the planet right now are running around trying to figure out exactly what this is. But we have a feeling Richard C. Hoagland of the EnterpriseMission.com and head of our own science department, I think he knows. Hi, Richard. How are you?
Good evening, George. Oh, this is juicy. Everybody sit down, take a deep breath. Tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern, NASA is going to announce they have found liquid water on the surface of the planet Mars.
Something you said 6 years ago.
In 2000, I put out a release with Mike Barra, my colleague who you met at Joshua Tree. Uh-huh. We found these seeps, these dark stains, you know, going across the surface. And we put out a release basically saying that this was evidence taken by the Mars Global Surveyor cameras of current liquid water as the spacecraft had passed overhead and looked down and taken a picture. And NASA, in every possible way, said, you guys are, pun intended, all wet. You're nuts. You're crazy. It's dust devils. It's avalanches. It's anything but water. 6 years later, tomorrow afternoon at 1 p.m. EST, NASA is going to announce as part of an intensive Mars Global Surveyor investigation over the last several years that they found liquid water seeping up on the surface under current Martian temperature and pressure conditions. And, George, this changes everything.
It sure does. The panelists tomorrow include Michael Meyer, whom you've mentioned. He's a lead scientist of the Mars Exploration Program. Michael Malin, of course.
You good old Mikey Malin.
He runs those cameras, doesn't he?
He's the one in charge of the camera, yeah.
Kenneth Edgejet, he's a scientist, and Philip Christensen.
He's Malin's deputy.
So all these four heavy hitters are going to be on this panel tomorrow to announce what you believe to be rushing water on Mars?
Well, I wouldn't say rushing. It depends on the surface pressure and the aquifer and all that. But see, the big thing is that when in 1965, if you cast your mind back, we entered the post-Lowell Mars scenario, where Mars was, in the words of Elton John, not the kind of place to raise your kids. And it was an atmosphere too thin, no oxygen, temperatures too cold. So it was basically a cold, glaciated desert. And definitely not suitable for life. And slowly, as the years have gone on, we have edged closer and closer and closer. I mean, you can almost hear the drip, 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 more puns intended, of the time-release aspirin, because they're edging up, George, step by glacial step to this idea that Mars actually was once extraordinarily habitable. Something catastrophic happened. Mars is still habitable if you're a robust organism. And with the discovery of liquid water on the surface, we now have closed the last gasp to the next big thing is there something or someone alive down there now?
Well, we will stay tuned for tomorrow's briefing, Richard. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Richard C. Hoagland. He's heads up the enterprisemission.com. A little bit later on this hour, I'm going to tell you some things that Richard's been working on. Well, U.S. Defense Secretary nominee Robert Gates has told the Senate committee that the United States is not winning the war in Iraq, counter what President Bush is saying. Mr. Gates told a confirmation hearing that he was open to new ideas on Iraq, but warned the situation there would shape the Middle East for years to come. The committee approved him to replace Donald Rumsfeld, who quit last month amid criticism of his Iraq policy. The next chairman of the panel, said Mr. Gates, would face a monumental challenge if confirmed by a full Senate vote. In St. Louis, a St. Louis man was shot to death over a warm beer. Police say a woman shot her husband, who is about 70 years old, 4 to 5 times in the chest after he tried to give her a warm can of Stag beer. All 11 Taco Bells implicated in an E. coli outbreak in New York and New Jersey use the same food distributor, apparently. The restaurant chain said as health officials tried to pinpoint the source of the dangerous bacteria that sickened at least 3 dozen people. 9 people remain hospitalized in New Jersey and New York, including an 11-year-old boy, sadly in stable condition, with kidney damage. And we're going to check in a moment with Dr. Mark Siegel about just the food we eat at all these places to find out exactly what the heck is going on. New York City, by the way, long known for clogged arteries during rush hour, took a big and controversial step toward helping improve human arteries when the Board of Health there officially banned artificial trans fats from restaurant menus. The board, which passed the ban, unanimously gave restaurants a little break in time. All food served by July 2008. You can't use those frying oils, those trans fats, anymore then. An annual report released Tuesday put Minnesota, I lived there once, at the top of its health rankings for the 4th straight year, while concluding that the nation's health improved slightly. A report by the United Health Foundation, which is an independent, not-for-profit foundation funded by the healthcare company United Health Group, said Americans are 0.3% healthier than they were a year ago. It's about even, as far as I'm concerned. The report is based on factors such as personal behaviors, the environment that you live and work in, decisions by public and elected officials, and the quality of medical care. Examples include smoking, motor vehicle deaths, high school graduation rates, children in poverty, access to care. Vermont was the second on the list, followed by New Hampshire, Hawaii, Connecticut. At the other end, the report listed Louisiana as the least healthy state, followed by Mississippi, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Arkansas. Incredible story, and I'm going to read it the way it is. Flatulence brought 99 passengers on an American Airlines flight to an unscheduled visit to Nashville early Monday morning. I kid you not. American Flight 1053 from Washington's Reagan National Airport, bound for Dallas, made an emergency landing after passengers reported smelling struck matches. The passengers and 5 crew members were brought off the plane together with the luggage. They went through all the security checks. Bomb-sniffing dogs found spent matches, matches that were lit. The FBI questioned a passenger who admitted that she struck the matches in an attempt to conceal her body odor. The woman lives near Dallas. She was taken off the flight. The plane took off. American Airlines has banned her, they say, for a long time. I am so sorry I broke up on that one. In a moment, Dr. Mark Siegel, our guest, as we talk about the food we eat because it's just getting too contaminated. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Mark Siegel, MD, is an associate professor of medicine at NYU School of Medicine. He's a columnist for the LA Times Health Section and a regular contributor to the Washington Post. He's a member of the board of contributors at USA Today. He appears regularly on the NBC Today Show, CNN, Fox News Channel, And also this program now, his 2005 book, False Alarm, The Truth About the Epidemic of Fear, was voted in the top science books of the year by Discover Magazine. This book, which features a chapter on West Nile virus, is coming out next month in paperback. Dr. Siegel is also the author of Bird Flu, Everything You Need to Know About the Next Pandemic, published in early 2006. Still, Dr. Mark, as we've talked about over the months, no bird flu pandemic yet, huh?
Not yet, George. I think we're subject to an A plus B equals D problem. We have a problem. It could be bad, but several steps have to happen before it could happen. And we can too easily miss some of those steps when fear gets involved. We immediately think it's going to happen to us. And it is of note that nothing has happened, even in birds here. It's something we got to track, but something we don't need to jump to conclusions about.
Okay, what's going on in our world of food, Dr. Siegel? First, we have this spinach scare, and now we have this E. coli situation on the East Coast. I'm reading a story that says 1,000 people a year die from contaminated chicken. What the heck's going on, Mark?
Well, George, there's a lot of things. You know, I spoke to my Taco Bell this morning in my hometown, East Meadow, where one of the cases was found, and it was an absolute ghost town there. So the first problem is fear, that even though there's under 40 cases, people are very much afraid of fast food tacos, at least on the East Coast right now. And that's because when we hear a news item like this, we immediately worry about it because it's a mystery bacteria and it's so small you can't see it. We think it could get us. So that's one problem. The other problem, and this is not insignificant, George, is that there is a food safety problem because something like this falls in the cracks between animal and plant and then food. We have the USDA looking at animals and plant safety. We have the FDA looking at food. But this is kind of in between. It starts as a plant or an animal, and then, you know, you lose track of it. And since a fast food chain like this is using a distributor that sends a product around the country, it's very hard to keep track of it, and that's why it can crop up in different states. It's a real problem, especially since a bacteria like this E. coli is so tiny, and you can get it without, even if you wash the vegetables, you know, you can still get it. So that's the problem. There's a larger problem here about how we raise our meat in this country and how we raise our crops, that we're not really careful enough. You know, we put everything very close together. I mean, this has been well publicized. Our cattle is too close together. Our chickens are living in squalor. So this breeds bacteria and makes it more likely for something like this to happen.
You know, we're at the mercy of these facilities. You know, when people drive up, most of them in their cars, grab something quick, eat it in the car or park in the parking lot. I mean, they're doing it because they can't afford the time to spend going to a restaurant. And I mean, what's going to be done about this, Dr. Siegel? I mean, we are at the mercy of these facilities. And people have to eat.
You know, and I've been there, George, and I'm sure you've been there. You're driving late at night, and all you can see is that sign in the distance, and you're so happy to see a place.
Yeah, you're starving, you know.
You can get a cup of coffee you haven't eaten in hours. So, I mean, it obviously is very important for places like this, chains like this, to be under strong regulation so that the food you do eat at 2 o'clock in the morning is healthy. Having said that, I'm also a big fan of getting produce from your local person if you can. I mean, you don't have any guarantee there either, but this doesn't spread. This isn't going to appear in a farm stand somewhere. This occurs because of the packaging of the food.
What is it about food that we need so much, Dr. Siegel? I mean, it's almost like gasoline to a car. You know, when you're fading, you're getting weak, all of a sudden you eat and you start feeling better. What is happening to your body when you do that?
Well, you know, people actually, a lot of my patients tell me they feel that they're becoming hypoglycemic. It isn't usually the case that your hormones kick in that way and give you a low sugar. But one thing's for sure, the energy boost you get from having a carbohydrate, especially late at night, it gives you an energy boost and it makes you less fatigued. So, and also, here's an interesting thing, George. The brain gets used to seeing that and doesn't make it itself. We make our own endorphins in the brain, but if we're getting it from outside sources, like we become fast food junkies, we get used to seeing that type of opiate from the food we eat rather than manufacture in the brain. That's why my kids are getting addicted to French fries, because the French fries are giving them that boost, and they're not getting it naturally anymore.
Now, what's this planned ban by New York City about trans fat? Tell us about trans fat, first of all.
Well, trans fat really is unhealthy, but there has been a big controversy about that in New York because, you know, there's also an issue of freedom and privacy, and, you know, people should be able to eat what they want to eat. So there's been a big back and forth about that, but now the ban actually is going into place. There's no doubt that trans fats are not healthy for you, but that's only part of the problem. I mean, the major issue is to eat a well-balanced diet. I think a small amount of anything is fine, including trans fats. But the problem is that we eat too much of a kind of food, that or carbohydrates. If you get enough proteins and vegetables and you have a well-balanced diet and you don't eat, you know, you don't stuff yourself at a given meal and you exercise a lot and you drink a lot of water, that's the healthy lifestyle.
Trans fats are formed when liquid oils are made into solid fats by adding hydrogen in a process called hydrogenation. A common example of this is partially hydrogenated vegetable oil, which is used for frying and baking, turns up in processed foods as well, cookies, pizza dough, crackers. Eventually, will we get this banned in everything?
Well, I think that it's, as you just described it, I think the listeners can understand how unhealthy this is. I don't know if it will be banned or restricted. It's a big difference. I mean, some of these things taste awfully good. And, you know, it's hard to ban a cookie. So I think that it's important that we take it very seriously and look what it is we're eating, because, you know, there's a very strong belief that fats, especially the bad kind of fats, can lead to heart disease and can increase the amount of cancer that you get. And I think we have to look very carefully about what's in our environment and what we put into our bodies. But an actual ban, you know, goes a little bit on the far side of that. I'm in favor of restricting rather than banning.
Do packaging labels tell you you're eating trans fat? Is it labeled as such?
Sure they are, George, but, you know, that's a little bit misleading because it's based somewhat on the packaging. I mean, you know that story that a label can say that it has a certain amount of the daily requirement, but that's based on a small amount, and then the amount you end up eating is a lot more than that. So labels can be misleading. But another issue is just because something says it doesn't have trans fats doesn't mean that it's going to extend your life by 10 years. You know, you have bad things besides trans fats.
I'm saying, what do we do then about specifically some of these fast food places or restaurants that are giving us this kind of food? I mean, people are going to go out. They're going to eat. I don't know how many people will stop going to these facilities. I don't know if you should. What do we do?
Well, you know, George, these facilities are profit-oriented, so they're going to respond to public demand to some extent. And, I mean, you must admit that a place like McDonald's has actually increased the amount of lettuce and salads and fruits that they actually have in response to demand, yogurts and things.
Sure. They had to do that.
They had to do that, and I think we need a lot more of it. I think we need to rethink what it is we mean by fast food. And as you described it, I was thinking as a physician, the whole idea of going in at 1 o'clock in the morning in a tremendous rush to feed yourself when you haven't eaten in several hours sounds so unhealthy. We need to go to more regular lifestyles and, you know, getting more sleep and eating at appropriate times and with a certain amount of routine. Routines really do promote good health.
What have you been doing lately, Mark? What's been on your plate, aside from fast food?
Well, I've been trying to move in this direction. I'm trying to decrease, you know, the amount that I worry, and I'm trying to increase the amount that I play and that I relax and laugh. And, of course, I'm working on a new book about lessons I've learned from my patients. Because, George, I've actually discovered that rather than bringing everything that I know from a textbook to the table, most of the healing that I've done has come from things my patients have taught me. They know their bodies better than I do, and I can learn from that. I think good doctors all know that. You have to be humble as a physician.
Absolutely. I think so, too. You know, this other story I just had about Minnesota being the healthiest state, some of the others being not, that Americans are getting healthier, 0.3% doesn't tell me much, does it?
No, and, you know, a lot of it has to do with environment. I mean, in Minnesota is a real outdoors state, and people tend to do things. I think keeping active is really the key thing. I mean, in New York here, we sit behind a desk for 10, 15 hours a day, and we don't get enough exercise. If you're outdoors and if you're used to doing things that keep you active, I think that that's actually better for you, and you're going to be less stressed. But, of course, as the winter really hits, we've got to caution people not to overdo it, not to suddenly go from inactivity to shoveling snow or to really, you know, moving their car out of a ditch. And that's where all the heart attacks and strained muscles and bad backs occur.
We're going to take phone calls. We're going to keep you, Mark, for phone calls over the next half hour. So let's open up the lines. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line, 818-501-4721. And the wild card line ready to go at 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take your calls with the very renowned Dr. Mark Siegel as we talk about our food and just what's going on with all these viruses and diseases that are on them. By the way, if you're looking for a couple great Christmas gift ideas, how about the After Dark newsletter, first and foremost? And we're giving you a couple CDs of old Art Bell interviews with the late Father Malachi Martin. You can call 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. And also, if you're interested in the DVD series of Joshua Tree and God, Man, and E.T., Richard C. Hoagland's series, you can call toll-free at 877-345-6222. That's 877-345-6222. Or his mailing address at the Enterprise Mission is P.O. Box 22008, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87154. Okay, welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our special guest this hour, Dr. Mark Siegel. We're going to take your phone calls. Dr. Siegel's website, by the way, I'm going to spell it for you, drsiegel.com, just drsiegel.com. He's written a couple amazing books, one on the bird flu, the other called False Alarm, The Truth About the Epidemic of Fear. And as he mentioned, he's working on another one as well. To the phones we go. First time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to hear what the good doctor, his opinion is on this. It seems that we already know what the problem is, or rather the obesity problem is in the United States. And this can be a direct correlation, actually. It can be traced back around 40 years or so. And with the massive weight gain actually it started over a 5-year period, and that was when we started substituting everything. We started eating sugar with high fructose corn syrup, and I'd like to hear what the good doctor has to say about that. Once that was introduced over a 5-year period, we could start seeing a weight gain as a population starting to increase, and it never went down. And I'll hang up and listen. Thank
good,
you.
Good point, Mark. Go ahead.
Well, I think that's a great point. I think it's a contributing factor. I think it's a very, very highly packed calorie source. I think it's in a lot of our drinks. It's in a lot of our soft drinks. It's in a lot of our power drinks. And I think that it's a major, major contributor. Having said that, I don't think it's the only issue. I think it's part of a culture which encourages us to eat a lot of high-calorie foods and to drink a lot of high-calorie, high-sugar foods. And these things are very tasty, and they're very compelling, and they're really addictive. I think if we gave it the word addiction, we would understand it better. The way the brain works is that if you get something that's very high sugar, it basically leads you to crave it, and you stop making these energy things yourself. Your body sees all that sugar, and it kicks into a mode where you're just creating the hormones to dispose of the sugar and to metabolize it, and it's a vicious cycle. You start to put on more and more weight. I don't know if people realize that fat comes from sugar. When you load your body up with sugar, it's converted to fat, and that's why we get obesity. Now, one thing's for sure, we have an obesity. We don't have a bird flu epidemic in the United States, but we do have an obesity epidemic. And I don't think that the only issue is the high-calorie fructose, this corn syrup, but that is a major, major problem.
Why is it that, in my case, I can go months without eating any sweets at all? And then all of a sudden, Mark, one day I'm in the store and I'll get a little bag of cookies and I'll eat the whole thing. Why do I do that when I go so long without any craving at all?
Well, because it's, you know, George, it's hidden in the back of your mind. And then once you get that taste, you start to crave that taste. There's something called the flavor point where basically your brain turns on and off with certain flavors. And the trick that a lot of manufacturers put is they put a lot of flavors in the product at the same time. So your cookie has both sugar and salt, so you don't turn off the brain. The brain stays turned on and says, give me more cookies, give me more cookies. And then once you're in that pattern, it becomes like an addiction. Same as cigarette smoking, same as alcohol.
That's a good point, because these cookies always have like raspberry in it, and I love that.
And
that's
and then
what
you
gets
forget
me.
How great raspberry is until you taste it again, and then you can't get enough. Same true with ice cream.
Yep. Wild card line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Good morning, George. How are you?
Good. Morning. Thank you.
I had a question for your doctor. My wife was diagnosed with having cysts on her ovaries and her vaginal area and now in her breast, and I was wondering, is there something particular kind of diet or food that she should be eating to help with that problem? Because I'm a firm believer a lot of it has to do with what you eat.
You know, that's a great question, and it's a little counterintuitive, but the fact is that diet can play a role in cystic breast disease and also in ovary. And the main thing that I'm concerned about is the use of coffee. Coffee and caffeine can increase the amount of cysts you have, but you should know that having cysts themselves doesn't automatically mean something dangerous. Plenty of women have cysts in either their ovaries or their breasts, and they never turn into anything.
Good. Well, I just was concerned with it. Now, she doesn't drink caffeine at all. Matter of fact, she's a non-cola drinker. She doesn't drink coffee, tea, none of that stuff. She's never been a caffeine person ever.
Well, it may just be genetic. But, you know, if she eats right and exercises properly, gets enough sleep, that will also decrease the risk of getting these. But they're pretty benign to begin with.
Okay. Well, Doc, thank you. And George, thank you.
You're welcome. I heard, Dr. Siegel, that caffeine now is good for you. They keep changing it.
Well, you know, caffeine is not good for you, but it is okay in moderation. Part of the problem is that we're getting power drinks now that add a lot of caffeine.
Yes.
Because we're trying to compensate for how tired everybody is. But the way to compensate for being tired is actually to sleep more and to exercise more. And, you know, I worry about caffeine only because if a person has an underlying illness that they're not aware of, some heart disease or something they're not aware of, if you give them too much caffeine, which is really a stimulant, you can actually provoke something. So you got to be careful using that.
West of the Rockies, welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hi there.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
How are you doing?
Good.
Okay. I'm stepping away from the lambing pen so that we don't hear the sheep so much, but if truck drivers have to honk their horn to prove they're truck drivers, do I have to have sheep mad to prove I'm a shepherd when I call in?
I hear them in the background.
I'm moving away so we can actually have a conversation.
How many are in your herd?
This particular band has 50. Soon to have many more because they're popping out all over,
yeah,
okay?
It's the season soon.
And it's a full moon. That's why I'm out in the lambing pen.
All right. You can stay right in the middle of them. I kind of like that bow.
Can you hear me over a wall?
Yeah, we sure can.
Okay. This is a first, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Directly broadcasting from the lambing pen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I produce and direct market all natural lamb and beef. No hormones, no antibiotics, and all grass finished. Dr. Mark, have you looked at all into the, what you would call the profile, the nutrient profile of all natural, all natural, sort of a catchphrase, grass finished beef and lamb with a very high conjugated linoleic acid and very high omega-3 fatty acid profile?
I'm very glad you brought that up. You know, I'm going to give you a plug here. I think you're absolutely right. Part of the reason that this bacteria is occurring is because we're feeding our beef grain instead of grass, and that causes them to have more acidic stomachs, and then they are more prone to have this E. coli. And I think that that's part of the problem, and antibiotics make it worse by promoting drug resistance. There's been some studies that show if you give antibiotics to cattle, they start putting out a lot of this kind of E. coli in their feces. So you're right. This is what we need to do. I'm glad you're doing it, and those sheep sound very healthy in the background.
Keep preaching the doctrine of good food, and we are the minority, but we're a vocal minority, and I think we're going to win in the long run.
Absolutely. Keep it up.
And have a good evening.
Thank you.
I love the sound. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, I was wondering if the doctor thought about organic French fries.
Organic French fry. Now, all right, what's an organic French fry?
Well, it's a regular French fry, but it doesn't have any trans fat or anything.
Ah, okay.
They're really good.
I assume that's okay, isn't it, Dr. Siegel?
Well, you know, that's a heck of a lot better than a non-organic French fry, but there's another issue, which is how it's prepared. I mean, part of the problem with French fries is frying them, and if you fry them in deep oil, that promotes more trans fats, and it also gives you a situation where you do what I was describing before. You encourage the brain not to make its own opiates. So, yes to organic French fries, but then let's bake them instead of frying them.
Baking's probably the best way. What do you think of microwaving food?
I don't, you know, microwaving has been studied, and it's one of those things we're unduly afraid of. I mean, I having said that, I'd like to see some long-term studies on it, but we automatically assume because it's sci-fi, you know, in the futuristic, these waves that you can't see, that they're very unhealthy. But actually, studies have not shown that microwaving is unhealthy. You've got to be very careful, though, with plastics, you know, because you don't want too much plastics in the environment. But I don't think microwaving in and of itself is unhealthy.
Wildcard Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. I'm a long-time listener. My name is Brad. I'm out of Plainville, Kansas.
Okay.
I wanted to ask the doctor what his opinion is. I'm a 21-year-old bodybuilder, and there's a lot of products out there claiming to just do, you know, wonders to the body. And I just wanted to ask him what his opinion was and what, you know, on the best supplements out there and food out there for a bodybuilder.
Well, you know, here's my view on this, and you might not like, I don't know. But first of all, the problem with over-the-counter supplements is they can't be regulated, so you don't know how much you're getting. The FDA isn't in a position to regulate these things. Secondly, I would be careful of all products that may be steroid-like, even if they're legal and can be in over-the-counter substances. Reason being is because down the line, you may get strong muscles now, but you're going to pay for it later on. And you get feminization, you know, you get problems with wear and tear on the muscles. You can have problems with bones, so eyes. I am not a huge fan of the steroid products. I mean, look, they've gotten a lot of bad publicity. It doesn't need me to jump on that bandwagon. But I'm a believer in using more natural things to build up. And so I'm a big fan of herbs, but I watch out for herbs that have either stimulants or steroids in them.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I want something that's natural. I'm not into steroids or anything. And, you know, I want something that is healthy for me to, you know, build my body up and get where I'm comfortable, with my results.
Well, you know, I don't know of a product per se other than to just say good nutrition, because a lot of the supplements you have to be very careful about. But a lot of herbs are very, very good for you. So I would just watch out for things that have long names in them. they tend to be steroid derivatives. But as long as that's not in there, a healthy product that's a combination of herbs and vitamins is very good.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate you being on the program. Have you heard about this federal mandate of putting fluoride in bottled water?
Yeah, I have heard of that. Now, you know, fluoride has done a lot of good for us over the years. Again, it's one of these things that's not completely studied, and I have some concern over it, but it has sure done a great job in cutting down on dental caries. So putting it in water, you know, We've grown up, George, you and I have grown up drinking tap water, and we got plenty of fluoride. Now I'm drinking bottled water all the time. Of course, it undercuts the whole feeling that you're getting something out of a stream, doesn't it?
Yeah, but isn't fluoride, though, like a poison derivative from fertilizer?
Right, but no, that's right. But fluoride also protects your teeth. So, again, you know, microscopic amounts are good for the teeth and prevent dental caries, but it goes against the idea of something being very natural.
Well, exactly. Let's move next to our first-time caller line. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Brent from Decatur, long-time listener, first-time caller. I enjoy your show, George.
Thanks, Brent. Thank you.
I had a question for the doctor. It's kind of a 2-3-part question. I've suffered chronic fatigue immune deficiency syndrome since 1989. And I recently, on the internet, stumbled across a syndrome called leaky gut syndrome. I wondered if the doctor knew anything about that and whether he thought that it was related to excess yeast in the body and maybe a diet that would help clear that up.
Well, you know, first, that is a three-part question because, first of all, there is such a thing called leaky gut syndrome. It's hard to know if that's the cause of your chronic fatigue syndrome because chronic fatigue syndrome comes from many causes, and it's hard to know whether it's a virus that you had in the past or whether it's due to muscles or exactly why. You could have underlying thyroid disease. Your chronic fatigue syndrome is a catch-all, and it carries a lot of issues. There is an issue in terms of absorption in the gut, proper nutrients. I'm not as much a fan of the diagnosis of yeast in the body because it's hard to prove scientifically, and I don't really believe that candida can actually float around the bloodstream, which is basically sterile. So I'm on 2 for 3 out of that. I think your chronic fatigue syndrome is real. I think you have to be checked for many different causes. I think absorption of nutrients in the gut is one of them, but I'm not as concerned about yeast.
Okay, thanks. Let's appreciate the your comments on that. Let's go to the wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Hi.
Hey, I just want to ask the doctor a question about hyaluronic acid.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, on September 7th, 2001, there was a big story broke on how hyaluronic acid was found to be the ingredient in the lives of these people in Japan that had very supple skin and their joints were in good health and so forth, and they said it came from 2 starches being combined in their diet. Does the doctor know what those starches come from?
You know, some of this is found in red cabbage, but, you know, the problem is, and hyaluronic acid is actually very healthy for you. The problem is that you got to be careful about overloading on some of this stuff. You know, the same thing was felt about vitamin A for a while, and then a big study came out and said, well, vitamin A may actually increase the risk of stomach cancer. So it is something that is good to have as a supplement, but not overdo it. And in Asia, there is some of it found in red cabbage.
Time for one or two more quick calls, and that is it. Wildcard line, you're on with Dr. Siegel. Hi.
Hello there. How are you?
Good.
Good. Sir, I just have a very quick question. Doctor, I have been following a strict diet that has been quite uncomfortable, I may say. Now, within the past several months, I've found, to my surprise, I've lost about 25 pounds. But as I am trying to find greater things, much more tasty things to enjoy, I'm constantly confronted by the warnings of eating this and eating that. I was for a while eating cereals in the morning, but realized there was way too much sugar. So I started trying to supplement other things. And just recently at work, I was eating an instant soup. And I said, well, this would be good. It will fill my stomach and it won't weigh me down. Until I looked at the side of the box and I saw how much sodium is in this soup. And I'm wondering if you could possibly provide all of us with some really good ideas of things that we could eat regularly without overdoing it that makes sense, rather than being so hypersensitive on each and every little thing that we might put into our mouth.
Well, first of all, that is a great question, and it's a really, really important thing for everybody to hear. I want to congratulate you on your loss of 25 pounds, and I agree with your point that you can get to the point where you're obsessing too much on what specific thing to eat or not eat at any given time. Having said that, I am a fan of bulking agents like salads. I think salads are terrific. They not only have a lot of vitamins in them, vegetables are very good for you, uncooked vegetables, cooked vegetables. Salads really tend to make you feel filled up without giving you a lot of things that are bad for you. And as I was hinting before, there's a theory called flavor point, which I like, which basically says choose one strong flavor, and that flavor will shut your brain off without making you hungrier. Something like peanut, something like chocolate, something like lime, strong flavors. And almonds are also very, very good for you, by the way. We tend to underutilize our nuts. An almond or a walnut is so heavily packed with very much the good kind of fats that you need.
Very good. Mark, thank you so much for being on the program. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, George. Thanks for having me.
Always. We'll be back in a moment with Robert Duncan. Are alien abductions caused by neurological weaponry? That's just one of the things we're going to talk about up next on Coast to Coast AM.